Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, March 20th, 2016, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. I'm Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grantham Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How about yourself, Grantham?
I'm just fine. This week I did both syllables in your name. So most of the time I say Gabriella Faust. So people write in and say, is her name Foster or is it Faust? Because each week, Grantham, you mispronounce her, the last syllable. So this week I said Foster, right?
Foster, yes. That
yes,
is correct.
Sure. So let's see, those editorialisms are funny, even though it's totally unprofessional. I admit that. I'm the first one to admit it's very unprofessional. I truly apologize. Someday I'll be professional. However, in light of that, in terms of politicians that read their speeches, I did read off the introduction. I wrote it down briefly so I would get it right in its proper chronological order. Thank you very much, everybody. Ta-da! So I actually can read, too. So it's not all autoschedism, right? There we go. You like that one?
Yes. Autoschedism.
That's right. We're autoschedious.
Correctly? Did I pronounce it
yes.
correctly?
We're autoschedious on the show. You can appreciate it. It's a talent. We call it, or you can call it winging it, a more colloquial expression. So being autoschedious, meaning we're doing extemporaneousness here. We don't have writers. We just, here we are. You know, we go with the knowledge that we have. I appreciate that. You're a talented person also.
Well,
Gabriella
isn't that your
Foster.
Speciality?
What?
Isn't that
What's
your that? Speciality, autoschedism?
yeah, exactly. It would be adiaphorism, too, in terms of individuals. Because in medical science, they say if it doesn't, if you believe it or not believe it, or if it's in between, they can't say neutrality. For some reason, neutrality seems to be a taboo term or something, you know. If you're in the middle, they go, oh, well, now we're talking about Buddhism. We're talking about the middle path. Oh, not that. You have to be for or against something. In the middle, then you're adiaphoristic. So it's. So they use that in Presbyterianism. John Calvin used that term a long time ago. So I think they have the they came out of that group, and I apologize to the Presbyterians if I get it wrong. If you're all Calvinists and formally, but now you're Presbyterianism. But then the word presbyter means priest. I looked that up. I was always wondering what is a presbyter. You see, in terms of. We know what a Protestant is in terms of protesting, Protestantism, you know. It's an obvious way you have a protest, but a presbyter is very different in terms of that. So everybody get out their dictionaries today. Uh-oh, here comes Grantham with all his logodidalianism or sesquipedalians, which is a term for a word and a half, a sesqua that he used in Latin for one and a half. So. I truly apologize, but my interest in reference books. I say I don't have any intelligence, but I just have a lot of vocabulary. well, it's nice to be on a roll to start out the show. What do you think?
Yes, that's. I think that's very good. Everyone should have a roll if they're hungry.
yeah. See, I thought of that like a cinnamon roll, right? Or a jelly roll, whatever. A jelly roll,
well,
right?
There are lots of different types of roles, and it depends what kind of role you want to play.
Ah, well done. Bravo. I really like that. Our idle banter is very amusing, I think. People really like it, though. So I get a lot of very positive emails, and people appreciate our silliness. I'm blowing my nose. I apologize. Oh, you blew his nose on the show. Not that.
You certainly did break my eardrum with that. I don't know what that piercing noise was, but I think I have to have my ear replaced.
I see. Replace my ears, bring that in there. Okay, get them up here. Garcon.
Yeah. Might need one.
Yes, you might need one. Are you okay?
I am. I'm perfectly fine. Thank
you. That's great. That's really great. Well, I'm out of gas already. We got 25 minutes left. So, like I said tonight before the show, before I got on, I didn't know what I was going to say, but that doesn't hold me back, obviously. So we, our agenda each week is attempt to talk about the planks of the platform of the 1930 Geneva Convention bankruptcy, which right away people fall asleep, especially in classrooms, you know, where people, when you talk about politics, they consider it very boring, and like in general elections, very few percentage of people will vote even. So people really don't care. And unless it's something, I don't know what gets people. Let me ask you this. Hey, since you're a young lady, what interests young people these days?
What interests young people these days? And yeah. Thank you for calling me a young lady. What interests young people these days? Well, that's an interesting question. I have no idea.
Isn't it like they say sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I don't know because I don't have teenagers. I am not a teenager, and I don't really know the answer to all of that, to any of those questions. But I think, you know, it just depends on the individual. I don't think they're all interested in the same thing.
But don't you think it's like the media, and this is a pet peeve of mine, that whatever is put out there in 10 categories of lesser of evils, they say, if you put it out there, it's going to be selected. So, you know, they wrote seven, the gal that wrote Mary Poppins, I can't remember the author's name. But anyway, she wrote seven
Travers.
Books. Right, and she wrote seven books and they only did one movie. They could have done six sequels and didn't bother with it, see? But that's very wholesome, and then people say, well, that's not interesting because they don't do it. Like an action film or something of that nature. But I don't know if that always appeals to everybody in terms of, I think a higher percentage would go for more wholesome entertainment, in my opinion. I know they don't do musicals anymore. I don't really know why. Maybe they didn't sell. I'm not sure. Do you know the reason why they stopped doing musicals?
I don't know. I guess they probably weren't selling. People probably weren't interested in them anymore, because they would still be making them if they could make a profit, I'm sure.
Well, Woody Allen tried some of that in terms of a few gestures towards musical. Wasn't there a movie in the past, at least 10 years, that he was attempting to do some music, something on a Roman theme?
Something that he did. I don't remember what the name was, but there was something that he did, but. The famous musicals aren't being done. You know, the ones that were really popular in the, I guess, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Well, even the 30s. Like, does it really extravaganza as they used to do?
Yeah. You know,
spending all that money and, right. And there's the swim ones with Esther Williams and all that.
I used to watch those on TV as a kid. The reruns of those. That's true.
Right, and there were these really fabulous musicals where it was very elaborate sets and spend millions. Maybe in those days it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. They didn't spend millions. That was really considered a lot of money in those days. But they were these very elaborate sets. They used to go into a lot of art to do that. But again, I guess, but just we know the movie industry because you lived in California, so did I, in the Hollywood area at one time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the expense of the films are so heightened these days, it's, the risk is really high. You know, here today, gone tomorrow. I think Orion's gone now, too, because they lose their shirt on deals sometimes. So they don't, their profit is meager as opposed to what they put into it. So it's a real high-risk business. I mean, they always consider being, what is it, that people really go for that and are really interested into it, it's keenly, and then the Academy Awards is the biggest TV share, the most watched television show. So there's a lot of focus on it, but then a lot of people don't realize the business itself really isn't that profitable. I mean, it really isn't, as opposed to, say, levels of banking, which would be creating and they don't really have much of a margin of a failure. So there's a lot of margin of failure there, and they realize that. So it's a high-risk industry, albeit most people think, well, what's the term I'm looking there? It's flamboyant, or there's so much attention on it, they're so interested, everybody wants to be involved with it. But then when the dust clears, you realize it's a really difficult industry. It's a lot of competition, and it's not too creative any longer. You and I have had a lot of interest in that. At one time, being out there in California, you're part of, they say, the business, quote unquote, that type of thing. So it's a big deal internationally in terms of entertainment, and the film industry is a big deal. We know that, right? I mean, you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of money in it. I mean, a lot of money spent to make a film.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's high risk. I think there's a lot more money spent than than is much taken in. In comparison, it's like investments. Investments, you have to have a lot of money to really make money, because even the stock market, to make 100%, you've got to double the price of the stock. If you buy a $20 stock, it has to go to $40 to get to make money. That's not really, they consider that a lot of money. If you make 10% a year, they consider it a lot. But it really isn't when you understand the whole money-making business. It's really meager, you know, in terms of, I'm always talking about swifting and trying to discuss that, because they're really, in what we do is there's no upfront monies. But in this market, this day and age, there's a lot of money being spent up front. I mean, millions of dollars. I mean, bankers actually approach their account holders with deals that are mega dollars, right? And then they put in a high percentage of money to get back a real small return. And they'll spend many years trying to get that return. But when you're talking about mega dollars, they think it's worthwhile, but in reality, it'll never happen. That happens on a daily basis. So that's why people are nervous about large numbers, because they know that what goes on here in terms of the banking industry selling paper. So it's a really interesting dilemma, and lengthy, too. I mean, I have to spend a long, many hours explaining the details of it, but it can be very good. The problem is that even the bankers don't really understand the market that well in terms of paper that they sell that's been created at a high level. You see what I mean? So the idea that when you take cash up front, people are very concerned about that. They say upfront fees or what have you, especially if it's a large amount. That would be what secondary banking is about. So they go through all these details in terms of contracts and background information, what have you, and just all this stuff, when you don't really need to be doing that. In terms of the reality of it, in terms of creating money, it's a matter of just passing through a system. And I'm being general in the whole thing, because I didn't want to get into a banking discussion per se this evening. But in reality, it's very simple. And it's a very low risk, too. I mean, the way they do it in terms of the secondary level, I say secondary versus a primary, not prime, but primary trading, is that they will take the cash up front, and they shouldn't be doing that. There's no need to do that. At a higher level, they don't do that. See, so that's really helpful. And that's why there's a lot of problems, because there's a lot of loss, which is unnecessary. See, what I do, there's no loss in what I do, but they, in terms of a lower level, they don't understand it. See, it would be like the idea of trying to understand advanced technology of say, rheostatics versus a internal combustion engine, or impulse power versus light speed, or hyperspeed versus impulse speed. See, that dynamic, to learn about that dynamic will take a lengthy discussion. At the same time, if you're involved with a specialty in either end of it, then usually you're seeing a vast array of possibilities. You follow me in terms of that?
Okay, I'm sorry?
I see.
Hold on one second.
Okay.
I apologize.
Your time is up.
I had, no,
a
yeah.
second has has expired.
No, I have. I was having a problem. I was having a problem with my phone, so I lost touch for a moment there. Did you ask me a question?
It's okay. In other words, were you stimulated by anything I just said, or do you understand what I'm talking about in terms of
No, I wasn't stimulated at all. Sorry. I'm kidding.
I'm just kidding,
everyone. And no, see, I agree with you because you and I have talked about the banking thing a lot, and I agree that there shouldn't be any upfront monies taken, because the problem with upfront monies taken is then the procedure, the process, or whatever might not be accomplished, and then people have lost their money. So I agree with you on that. That it's not necessary to do that.
Right. It isn't necessary in the realm of creation of money. And the governments don't create it, the high-level banks do. See, but it's done with paper in terms of it's sent and then it becomes legal tender. Once it's legal tender, they can convert it. But it has to go through the process of swifting. It's not difficult, but in terms of how I presented it tonight, I left out a lot of specifics. It's sort of like when years ago they were talking about nuclear fission. One of my opinions about they're saying that the fissionization is done with a neutron. How do you do that? I mean, if the neutron is neutral, it's like a no power in it. It has to be done with an electron. In the 80s, they were explaining properly nuclear fission. Now they don't do it because they're afraid of people creating nuclear weapons and things. So it becomes ridiculous to start pulling out information. But a lot of it, I'm always under the verge. I mean, I'm off and on in terms of that they do this and they do that and the contrivance business. My opinion is mostly mistakes, misreasons. We make mistakes, we forget things. It would be like procedure in terms of deductive reasoning, the Holmesian concept. You know, you've heard me talk about this, where they say you eliminate the impossibilities and whatever's left, however remote, is the answer. But they never said that. Even in the movies with Basil Rathbone, the interpretation of Conan Doyle's work, Arthur Conan Doyle, they didn't say that. But what they want to do is eliminate the possibilities or eliminate anything that would be in the realm of maybe you put something someplace you're trying to find it, okay? Or if you're trying to find something, that you put it in a place where you've forgotten, so it's the most remote. You see what I mean? But it's not an impossible place. It's a possible place. So they misconstrue and make mistakes in terms of the scientific experiment of what this really is about, in terms of trying to find an answer to an experiment. But you look in a place that's remote for the answer. But ahead of time, you have to eliminate the possibilities. How do you eliminate something that's impossible? It's already done. It's impossible. See, that makes no sense. And they're always saying, well, you know, you want to stay on the subject and be logical. Well, I am. I'm on the subject. But let's look at that in terms of eliminating impossibilities. How do you do that? That's oxymoronic. Do I have elimination / impossibility? Is that stupid or what? See, so that is a thing that they're doing nowadays. I see it a lot. I'm saying, well, you're not paying attention to the historically what the original process was. You see what I mean? They get away from it, and then people don't question anything. They just allow it to take place because you've got the hierophants or the people in charge, the pseudo-authority or the powers that be, all those terms of phraseology, which is pure rubbish, become unaccountable. See, accountability... There are a lot of arguments that philosophers have given in the past that people go unaccountable because the audience isn't paying attention. They're all caught up in the evangelical type thing, or there's a term for that when you're caught up in things you don't understand. You see, that type of thing. See, the attention level is poorly. Because of iatropia. How do you know how to spell that word? They were trying to look it up this morning. I think it's iatropia.
The attention level is poor because of why?
Well, I was saying iatropia, you know, when they mix the chemicals. So how do you spell iatropia? Do you remember?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's just iatropHi.
PHI, okay. Oh, it's
PHIA,
iatropia.
Excuse me.
Iatropia with a PH?
Yeah.
PHI, okay. Anyway,
yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
we were discussing that, you know, you combine two pharmaceuticals and you have a categorically a disease called iatropia because you're mixing chemicals. All right, so that of itself, in my opinion, draws away from the attention level. You know, people become more aphasic. I know some clinical consultants and stuff don't like me using that term, but it is in some aphasia where you're not paying attention, like you're spaced out and you have a poor focus. And a lot of autism and Alzheimer's, all it is the essence of man is not focused. It's mostly in the eyesight. When you talk to these people, look people in the eye and draw their attention with the eyesight, you'll find the autistic people are sort of outside the body. They're outside of their consciousness. They're not focused. And, you know, they're spinning around their eyes and stuff. And you get their attention, snap your fingers or get their attention, look them in the eye, and you'll find that there's a tension level there. See, so people's attention level is poorly, a lot of nutritional issues and just psychological issues, because they don't want to participate in the nonsense that's around them. I understand that. I mean, I really do, especially in the West where people are shielded and they're very negative in terms of a fear factor. Fear is heightened these days. We're being in the Iron Age of a big, huge fear factor. And fear is singularly instantaneous. Like if you project fear immediately, animals pick up on that. So in terms of controlling, it's more of a letting go. If you try to control, you'll never be able to control the energy or how you feel. So you just have to let it go into the entity and then come what may of it, you see. So in other words, it's like an emotional level. The emotions that people deal with that, I tell people just to let it go. Use more observation, outflow, that type of thing. And don't get caught up in the introversion type, where you're introverting. You have to push yourself outwardly, so to speak. It would be, I mean, that's more metaphorical. It's hard to explain it, to put it into words, but it would be more like an outflow, not like in a new age sense, but more just observation, to see things. And that's part of the experimental process as well. I mean, that's the first step is observation. But we don't do enough of that. I mean, even the process of the deduction of the Arthur Conan Doyle's, he said that we see but do not observe. I mean, observation in terms of details, colors and definition and looking, and like going to a museum and really looking at a painting. I mean, really looking at it and not just glossing over things or scanning over. I think there's a tendency to do that too much. And then just like I was having a discussion with some people yesterday about the ideas of the body becoming more mechanical and starting out when they were using fillings in the teeth, probably way back in the late 19th century, probably when they were doing metal fillings, I think so. I don't remember. Do you know when they started doing fillings? Maybe pretty
no.
far back. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. I don't know the history of dentistry, so.
Right. I think when they got away from natural things, I think they were doing wooden teeth. They said George Washington had wooden teeth, but I think there was some kind of a myth about that. I don't know. All I know is when they started putting artificial parts into the body that were more non-biological, like wood would be obviously biological, that would have a naturalness to it. But when you start making metal parts, putting metal fillings, and that was like the beginning of the cyborgism, because you can see a gratuity with that. The gradualness in terms of that is an issue over decades of time. And then the converting the metal parts nowadays, people just take it as a happenstance, go in and replace your knee or your hip, and I'm going, hold it, time out, you know. Is that Frankensteinianism or what have you? Don't you agree with that being really silly?
Yeah, I think we're, you know, our medical, our level of medicine is really so akin to the level of leeches, basically. I don't think we're that really as advanced as we all, as we profess ourselves to be, because we're not healing. We're just patching things up. We're digging things out, patching things up, and drugging people so they won't notice the pain. So it's you know, they're not really healing anyone.
Well, I mean, my question is the artificial hips and knees and all the metal stuff that they're putting in the body. Don't you agree that that's rubbish?
Yeah, I don't like that.
I mean, just
it's not biological. So you're putting something in it that is, what's the word that I'm looking
for? But it's a gross operation. They're going in and cutting out the physical, you know, that's a real, if you observed, I've never observed those operations, but they're pretty, what would you call it, repugnant, you know, in terms of cutting out a whole knee and replacing. I mean, think about how Frankensteinian that is. It's like recreating a body. It's just awful. But they do it as like a normal procedure. That's Frankenstein. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
But nobody's even saying that. Everybody's afraid to even mention that because the medical science does it, so therefore it's okay. So they're unaccountable for their Frankensteinian behavior. But they do it as like a happenstance. It's okay. We'll come in and they even had something in the news. Did you hear about this? I told you about it. They were doing a replacement head. Can you believe that? How about that for ridiculous?
Wait a minute. Where did you read this?
I don't know. It was, I think, in China or somebody place. They were talking about they were replacing somebody's head.
Oh, come on. It's just too ridiculous.
No, I didn't make that up. I read
that.
It's online.
True?
You can probably look it up. You can look it up.
Yeah. Do you think it was accurate or do you think it was nonsense?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it came out of some medical journals or whatever. It's so ridiculous. I mean, and that's it. See how ridiculous it's getting? And that's absolutely Frankenstein. Mary Shelley, you know. There you go. Shades of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is supposed to have been complete fiction, now becomes nonfiction in our silly day and age of just happenstance medical practice. I mean, it's all the time people are telling me about having their knees replaced and hips, and wait a minute, you know, time out, you know, please, you know, what, and nobody's saying anything. They just go, oh, that's fine, that's wonderful, because if a medical doctor does it, they're gods, so they can do whatever they want to do. And I'm saying, no, it's absurd, it's ridiculous. I four square against it. I mean, I really am. I'm completely and totally incontrovertibly adamantine against it. What's that?
No, I am as well. I am as well.
Yeah,
the whole idea is
but nobody pregnant. Questions it. You ever hear anybody say anything against it? Oh, I had my knee replaced, and you're supposed to go, oh, yeah, applaud it and praise it and everything. No, there's very few people say anything about it. I think no one. I've never said heard anybody say anything against it. Ever, not even in the media. Have you? I've never heard anybody say anything against it.
No. Mm-mm.
See, that's absurd. The absurdity of the whole thing. So, you know, there has to be a voice in there somewhere. All right, so we're getting down to the end of the show. Thank you for being on the show each week, Gabriella. I appreciate
your welcome.
Participation. And I want to thank the journeymen as well that come on each week and the new people, too. Mm-hmm. And now I get to the point where I have to, I guess I'm doing the shows, learn how to do the timings, because I have to milk 90 seconds, right? If you speak very slowly, right? And then I got my intro right today, yay, because I wrote it down, you know, but it, whatever. So I'm very proud of myself, right?
God. I'm proud of you, too.
Thank you very much. Well, I really do enjoy doing the show. I know sometimes we get off segueing into some other information, but I think it's very interesting. We have a lot of knowledge here between the two of us, and I think it's very important that we have these discussions. And I always promise next week I'll get more on the discussion of the planks, and then if I don't do that, I truly and truly apologize. But remember this, folks, it's my show. I can do what I want, right? And I always say, if you don't like it, get your own show, right? Get your own show, and then do what you want to do on your show. So when you have
That's
your own
true.
Show, you'll find that maybe you can trail off and not be so concerned about being topic-driven, as they say. Hey, I did real well. I milked that 96 pretty well. I'm getting down to the last couple seconds.
Yes,
all right,
you're, very, you're excellent. Okay.
All right, see you next week. Goodbye for now. Grant and Taylor Hughes.